the J-Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. Ben Maxwell and Sam Robson with you. And Sam, the Samurai Blues journey in Qatar has ended about 10 minutes ago as we record on penalties at the hands of Croatia. A very tough way to go out.
Yeah, it always is on a penalty shootout, and yeah, especially the way that Japan took their penalties, it was pretty poor. But I thought generally they were quite good in the game. It's just kind of frustrating for me that I think Croatia were there for the taking, and Japan generally played pretty well. I don't think Croatia had too many chances that weren't of Japan's own making, with some poor passes from the back. So yeah, it's a frustrating way to go, because I really think a last eight place was there for Japan to grab.
Indeed, yeah, especially after taking the lead shortly before halftime through Daisen Maeda. And yeah, they played extremely well in the last 15 minutes or so of the first half and taken a deserved lead, and again looked comfortable in the early stages of the second half until Croatia basically manufactured a goal out of nothing. A terrific header from Ivan Perisic, and from there, yeah, it was fairly even. It was back and forth, Sam, but yeah, ultimately at the end of the day, it seemed like both teams were out on their feet, and yeah, throughout extra time, I mean, penalties seemed inevitable, didn't they?
Yeah, it did seem that way. Croatia weren't really putting much forward. Japan had a couple of breaks and a couple of chances from that, but they were fairly happy to sit in as well. It did look like legs went, especially in midfield, towards the end of the 90 and then into extra time for Japan, even more so than Croatia. And their midfield is quite old. They had to take Modric off in the end. So, yeah, it was kind of getting to a lot of the players, and it seemed an inevitability throughout extra time that the game was going to end in penalties.
Yes, although, yeah, there were a couple of late flurries from Croatia, weren't there? And, yeah, hearts in Japanese mouths. But, yeah, they managed to, well, I guess, yeah, both teams kind of made it through to penalties. And then, as you say, Sam, it was, basically forgettable spot kicks from Minamino, Mitoma and Yoshida, which were all saved by the Croatian keeper. Takuma Asano was the only Japanese player to score from the spot. And while one Croatian player hit the post, their other three penalties were successfully converted. And yes, they've taken down Japan 3-1 on penalties after a one-all draw. So, yeah, this has literally just happened, listeners. So, yeah, it's still stings very, very deeply after, as we said. And, I completely agree with you, Sam. Croatia were there for the taking, and it was arguably Japan's I don't think it's arguable at all. It was Japan's best performance of the tournament as a whole over the course of the 90 and indeed the 120 minutes. And again, that's just another reason why they'll just be leaving with so many regrets after, it was their most well-rounded performance. A number of excellent players on the night, but ultimately when it comes down to the lottery of penalties, then it can go either way, and Japan didn't hold their nerve.
It's really difficult to really assess how I'm feeling necessarily about Japan, because obviously they've had a tournament, they've beaten Germany, they've beaten Spain, they've taken Croatia to penalties. I mean, if you said that at the start of the tournament, you'd have absolutely bitten anyone's hand off who offered that. But yeah, it was just a game where Japan, I thought, were really good, especially first half. There was maybe a 10-minute period where Croatia got into it a little bit more, but really, we saw very little from Modric and Brozovic and Kovacic, which was my worry going into the game. I thought Kamada had his best game of the tournament. I thought Doan played really well. They got in and around that midfield, and Japan were on the front foot a lot more than we've seen in any of the previous games, and controlled large parts of that first half especially, and I thought were thoroughly deserving of the 1-0 lead. And really and truly, they defended pretty well, except for occasional lapses in concentration. There was that one from Tomiyasu where he played in Perisic for no real reason, and I think Yoshida gave the ball away one or two times as well. But other than those lapses in concentration, like, Croatia really didn't create any sort of clear-cut chance, and their goal, I mean, it's a really good goal from Perisic, and it's just one of those where if you concede, you just have to hold your hands up, because maybe they could have closed the cross down slightly, but you don't expect Perisic to land a header from pretty much just inside the area. So yeah, with that being said, like, Croatia not creating too much, I just thought, yeah, it was there for Japan, and maybe with a slightly better striker who gets on the end of some of the balls in from Ito, or maybe just someone who can hold it up a little bit more than maybe it was there for Japan. So, yeah, it's mixed feelings at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they've won, you know, numerous new admirers for their performances over the course of the tournament. But, yeah, at the end of the day, they're going home after they, yeah, failed to kill Croatia off, basically, because, as you say, Sam, yeah, there was a period in that around half an hour gone where, yeah, Croatia were certainly coming into the game. A number of crosses were raining in and a few anxious moments for Japan. But as I said earlier, the last 15 minutes of the first half, they really regained control and, as we said, took a somewhat deserved lead through Daisen Maeda, a really lovely deft touch across the box from his captain, Maya Yoshida, to volley Richard Doan's ball back across for Maeda to steal in and lash home. There was a slight VAR worry that Shogo Taniguchi might have been offside when Doan delivered the ball. But thankfully, Degzy Lovren had played Taniguchi on, and yeah, the goal was able to stand. So heading into halftime, 1-0 up, Sam. Yeah, I mean, I was wondering whether Moriyasu should have gone for the kill right then and there and brought his big guns on, i.e. Kaoru Mitoma, off the bench to try and, do something that Germany and Spain weren't able to do to Japan in the group stage, and that's kill off a wounded opponent who was on the ropes. And ultimately, I suppose he can't be criticised too much for sticking with what worked for him throughout the first half. But, I don't know whether he might toss and turn at night about not making a more decisive move earlier on in the game. But as it was only 10 minutes into the second half when Croatia equalised. So I guess he can, we can always point to that as, his plan, his match plan was going to plan at that point, as you say. But then Ivan Perisic manufactured that goal out of nothing. And then, I mean, well, can he have too many regrets at all, Moriyasu, when it comes down to penalties? Do you think he should have been more proactive and trying to basically stand on the throat of Croatia when they had them on the ropes?
I would agree with you that they maybe should have come out a little bit quicker at the start of the second half, maybe made that one change, which is Mitoma for Nagatomo. I don't think necessarily losing a great deal with defensively with having Mitoma there and an aging and tiring Nagatomo. So I would have made that change. It gives them something else to think about the other way. And yet, as I said before, I think they were there for the taking. They were, once Japan were quick and got at Croatia, they really managed to play through them quite easily. And yeah, just sitting off a little bit, it allows those players into the game. It allowed them just to get a foothold into the game, which they had lost towards the start of the first half. So yeah, maybe you would look back and maybe do it differently. But I mean, I don't think anyone really was thinking that he was going to go for an attacking change necessarily at 1-0 up halftime. So I wasn't surprised by it. And in the end, would it have made much of a difference? They'd probably still score the goal in the way they did. So I'm not sure. But yeah, it was a chance, I think, just to really press home the advantage at the start of the second half, which didn't happen. But after that, it was a fairly even contest. I think both teams tired in midfield. If I was going to be super critical, I don't think the changes of bringing out Kamada and Doan particularly worked in moving or bringing Minamino into the midfield. I don't think he had the energy. I don't think he had necessarily the conviction going forward or anything like that Doan and Kamada did. And it brought Ito moved around so much in that second half. I'm not sure where he was from any 1 minute, but I think they lost that kind of balance in midfield and the control that they'd been able to have. So those are the two areas I would look at. But yeah, I don't think he's going to be too disappointed with his own tactical approach to this. I think it was fairly decent. They kept Croatia generally at arm's length, and that would have been his main aim from the game.
Right. Yeah, no, fair enough. So I should just go back and say about the three changes he made for this game, bringing Tomiyasu in for the suspended Ko Itakura. A fit again, Wataru Endo came in for Aota Naka. And, Takefusa Kubo was absent, we believe, through illness. And, Richard Doan came back in to start his second game of the tournament. And, I mean, ultimately, I guess from what we've said, Sam, you know, they were there for the taking. Japan didn't press home their advantage when they were 1-0 up. Croatia scored an excellent goal to equalise 10 minutes into the second half. And from there, yeah, there were chances at either end, although Japan didn't really ever look like knocking down the door, did they? Mitoma came on with Asano in the 64th minute. But again, similar to the Costa Rica game, they weren't really able to get Mitoma unleashed, if you like, and properly able to make a good run at his marker. So yeah, it's yeah, the changes, and you mentioned Minamino coming on for Doan again. Yeah, they did seem to, if anything, kind of slightly hinder Japan. You would have hoped that for the fresh legs, obviously, to add some impetus in there. But yeah, overall, I don't think the changes had a necessarily overly positive impact on Japan's performance. Obviously, Mitoma always looks dangerous when he's on the ball. But Asano, yeah, this was just a game. I mean, it's a difficult job for him, obviously, up front as the lone man up against Dejan Lovren and Gvardiol, when Japan had to resort to just pumping long balls forward towards him in the latter stages, especially throughout extra time. But yeah, Asano certainly not his greatest evening in a samurai blue shirt.
No, he really struggled. He didn't really get much under control. He wasn't able to hold the ball up at all. He didn't really make great runs past the defence. He kind of made it a little bit too easy for Gvardiol, especially, he seemed to be up against. But I don't think he was helped by those midfield changes, because once you took Kamada and Doan out, there wasn't really a progression through midfield that there was in that first half. Japan weren't able to pass their way through. Like, the greatest respect to Minamino, it's just nothing really is coming off for him at all. And he wasn't able to take the ball on. He wasn't able to really create too much at all. He kind of chopped back every time he got the ball and didn't really look to create anything. And Doan and Kamada had looked really impressive, especially in that first half, and the way that they were able to progress the ball. So they kind of lost the midfield, so it left Asano really isolated. They weren't really high, like Mitoma, you'd really want him quite high, but he was still, again, very deep in his left wing back role. Yes, occasionally he was able to burst from there. That was that one effort where he ran 50-60 yards with that right foot shot, which was saved. But yeah, when he's so deep, he can't have a sustained impact on the game, and that's what Japan really lacked. They were good in bursts going forward, but there was very rarely in that second half a period where they had complete control and they were penning Croatia back. So yeah, that's just something that Japan could really need to improve on, and not being an be more of a side that can control games for longer periods rather than hitting with quick bursts. Yes, it's worked great against Spain and Germany, but I think that's the next progression for this side.
Yeah, fair enough. So kind of a broader picture question, Sam. We know, and you said that on our last episode, that Moriyasu hadn't used the three centre-back formation basically at all in his time in charge, and yeah, not at all during the qualification phase for this World Cup. And then yeah, we saw him switch to it at halftime in both the Germany and Costa Rica games, and then use it from the start against Spain and again tonight. So I'm not criticising the performances of the three centre-backs, because I think they all, you know, Taniguchi, a very unsung hero throughout his two starts. I thought he was excellent again tonight. Yoshida, obviously, in the centre of the back three. Yeah, he had his moments. He almost presented Perisic with another goal with about 15 minutes to go in the second half. But otherwise, I thought he was excellent again. And Tomiyasu gave the ball away at times, but yeah, was rock solid for the most part. So yeah, again, I'm not saying you would have wanted to get rid of one of those three players or not, but did you feel overall that the switch to that formation and then sticking with it again tonight against Croatia was actually beneficial for Japan? Or could they have used you know, an extra man in midfield? Could they have used an extra man further forward to I don't know, not necessarily kill off Croatia, which I've said that I wish they could have done, but did you think it in some ways it kind of restricted the Japan's ability to go forward and maintain pressure through the midfield and in the forward areas?
I mean, it can restrict them, but it's only the mentality that you set up with. You see in the first half, yes, Ito's playing right wing back, but he was very high up the pitch and creating a lot of chances. So it's not necessarily that you've played the three at the back system and you have to be really defensive and you lose it. I think they won the midfield still with that three at the back and looked quite decent going forward. So I think if you just flip that a little bit, maybe if you going forward, you do play Mitoma starting instead of Nagatomo. I imagine, I don't think he said anything, but that's probably his last tournament. He maybe carries on for an Asian Cup. But yeah, if you carry on and have Ito as a one wing back and Mitoma as another wing back, but much higher up the pitch, because you've still got the two holding midfielders there. You don't need necessarily the cover from those fullbacks as well. And when you've got a player like Tomiyasu is quite adept at going to right back, and then in the future you maybe have Hiroki Ito who is adept at going left back, then you've got that balance and you can still be a really attacking team. So I don't think it's necessarily the formation that necessarily hindered Japan. It was just like, why hasn't this been used before? It was just very weird that they haven't prepared it into the going into the tournament, especially if it was going to be a prime, like a formation used. Yeah, so that's the weirdest thing. I think if you have a sustained period of working on that, and then I think you can be a really attacking side with it. And it's proven a successful formation for Moriyasu in the past. I mean, he won countless titles at Hiroshima playing in this sort of system. So the biggest surprise maybe is that why hasn't he used it before and why haven't we seen that? So, yeah, I'm not saying four at the back is definitely a really much more attacking and a better system for it. I think this one could be used, and I think the first half shows how Japan could play as a more proactive team in this formation.
Yeah, no, fair enough. Then I was just wondering whether, yeah, we want to burden Ito and Mitoma with kind of any sort of sustained defensive responsibilities going forward. But I don't think anything's been announced at this stage, but we're obviously expecting that Moriyasu will carry on in the job if he decides to. So yeah, we'll wait and see if he sticks with that formation or tinkers with it slightly again as we head towards the Asian Cup. So it's a huge blow to lose on penalties, a bitter pill to swallow, Sam. The three players who saw their penalty saved obviously will need to take some time to get over the disappointment of that. It would have been great to see one of them kind of just stick their laces through it though, wouldn't it, Sam? Mm-hmm. I mean, they've tried to place them, and the keepers obviously read them like a book and saved them with consummate ease.
Yeah, nobody really looked like that confident, I don't think, going through. Nobody had any conviction in the strikes. There were four really quite scuffed efforts. I don't think Asano's was the greatest, but at least went the opposite side. So, but yeah, it was disappointing, but I'm not going to vilify any player that stepped up. I mean, Minamino took the first one. Great for him. I mean, great that he had the confidence and the ability to do that. And it's just a shame that it hasn't come off for him. But yeah, the game could have been won earlier than that. And once it goes to the lottery of penalties, I mean, yeah, it's how's your luck. And for Japan, it wasn't in yet, but maybe they could have struck them a little bit better. But yeah, it's just as disappointing. But I'm not going to complain or blame any of those players.
No, fair enough. It does take big cojones to step up in a moment like that. So, yeah, completely agree with you. All right. So, this obviously, will take some getting over, but it obviously shouldn't mask the fact that Japan have had a terrific World Cup. They obviously had the opportunity to make history and looked set to do so at times tonight, but it hasn't happened for them. You mentioned Doan and Kamada were excellent tonight, Sam. Who would you plump for as man of the match? It was overall a number of excellent performances on the night by Japanese players, as I mentioned earlier, but who in particular stood out for you?
Yeah, it's like a lot of good performances, but I would go for Doan. I thought he was magnificent. I think the energy he showed in and around Modric and Brozovic, Kovacic, etc., I think that was great. It was what was needed. It was what probably was lacking from Kubo as well. Plus, he had that drive to go forward. And then some of the balls he put in, it was his ball in for the goal, just a terrific cross in. And it was just generally everything that he did. He looked smooth. He looked, absolutely on. It proved why he should be in the starting lineup. So, yeah, I would go with Doan. But, yeah, anyone else that really stuck out for you?
Well, he didn't have the busiest night, but Shuichi Gonda came to Japan's rescue when they absolutely needed him. You mentioned that one early on when Tomiyasu basically gave the ball away to Perisic. A huge save from Gonda as Perisic looked to go across him. And then just past the hour, a Luka Modric special from 25 yards, superbly saved by Gonda. So, there were obviously players you know, field players who were excellent as well. But yeah, for me, Gonda was terrific and, you know, justified his place. He obviously has a number of critics. He's not the best goalkeeper in the world. And, you know, a lot of people say he's not the best Japanese goalkeeper, but I think overall he can be proud of his performances in this tournament. And yeah, tonight, when he was required, came to Japan's rescue. Obviously, I don't think there's anything any keeper in the world could have done for Perisic's header. I stand to be corrected if anybody wants to criticise Gonda's positioning there. Somebody who knows more about goalkeeping than I do. But, yeah, for me, that was just a fantastic header that that Gonda basically had no chance at keeping out. So, yeah, again, shout out to Yoshida. Again, he nearly give the Perisic his second of the evening, but apart from that, I thought he led extremely well. Yeah, Taniguchi was an unsung hero. And yeah, I mean, there were good performances right across the pitch for Japan. But yeah, as we said, when it comes to the lottery penalties, it can go either way, and it hasn't gone Japan's tonight. So yeah, not the best last couple of days for me, Sam, as Australia also obviously exited the tournament against Argentina in the early hours of a Sunday morning Japan time. A very brave performance from the Socceroos, I thought, and obviously were very, very close to forcing extra time with almost the last kick of the game. But yeah, Emi Martinez made a terrific reaction save. Yeah, unfortunately, Australia had to, make do with a 2-1 defeat. A very sterling performance from the Socceroos. They hung in the game, but ultimately came up just a fraction short. But you're buzzing, no doubt, Sam, after a testing start to the game against Senegal, but ultimately England were able to run out fairly comfortable winners.
Yeah, it was like the first 25-30 minutes I thought Senegal played well. They disrupted England, didn't really get too much going, but then a bit of quality from Bellingham especially. It was once again fantastic in that midfield. And once Henderson opened the score, I thought England were pretty comfortable after that, which is very rare to say for an England side in a knockout game at the World Cup. So yeah, I thought it was a really good performance. And yeah, going back to Australia, I thought they were magnificent. I think they deserve a lot of credit for the way they fought against Argentina. And what a story it would have been if Qualida scored right at the end to take it to extra time. I thought, yeah, credit to Australia, because nobody, I don't think, gave them much hope coming into the tournament to have run Argentina close in the last 16 ties. Yeah, great for them. So yeah, disappointing that they went out, and delighted, of course, that England are still in, and they've got France at the weekend, which isn't the easiest tie in the world. Good luck trying to seal Mbappe, but yeah, it should be a really interesting game. But yeah, disappointing for Australia and obviously for Japan, but hopefully Korea can do something magical against Brazil later on.
Well, yes, listeners, you'll know the result of the South Korea-Brazil game by the time you listen to this episode. Who knows? South Korea now left to fly the flag for Asia. And we wish them all the best in their game. It's already happened by the time you listen to this episode. But good luck to England the rest of the way, Sam. As you say, France will be a formidable opponent. I guess a moral victory for Australia against Argentina, but ultimately weren't able to take the chocolates and Argentina progress. And such a shame for Japan tonight, but hopefully when they the sting kind of subsides, they can reflect on a pretty epic performance in this World Cup. Obviously taking down Germany and Spain and making it through as group winners was a fantastic performance. It was there for them, and there'll be regrets. There'll be a pride, I'm sure, as well. But ultimately, it hasn't gone Japan's way. What can we say, Sam? Well, that's basically it for our year. Then we started very early doors with our preview pods ahead of the J1 season that obviously got off to a very early start. We saw the season all the way through, and now we've seen Japan through the World Cup. So. It's been an amazing journey with you, buddy. Thanks a lot. And enjoy the rest of the World Cup first and foremost. But enjoy having your Monday afternoons back without me bugging you for a while. But I guess before we know it, the J League will be back upon us. But thanks for a fantastic season, Sam.
Well, thank you as well. I mean, it's been a bit of a roller coaster, hasn't it? Just the same as Japan's World Cup run. Yeah, thoroughly enjoyed it, as I always do every Monday night. I think I've got a better attendance record this year than I did last, so that's slightly better. So I'll try and improve that again next year. But yeah, it's just a shame that it's ended with the way it has. We'd have been delighted if Japan could have broken that barrier and got into the last eight. But I think they performed better than a lot of us were expecting. We've got a little bit of humble pie to eat over Hajime Moriya. So not complete pie, but I think some of it we'll have to have. But yeah, look forward to getting back into it again next season. Should be another one. And I saw the rumour that Luka Modric is wanting to come to Japan. So I'll be a very happy man if we see Modric there next year.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. He'd be a welcome addition to the J League. Still plenty left in the tank, no question about that. All right then, yeah, we'll leave it there then. That's it for this episode of the J Talk podcast, and that's it for us for 2022. Sam and I would like to thank all of our patrons for their support on Patreon throughout the year. Thanks, of course, to John and James, Stuart and Mike for all of the work they do on J-Talk Extra Time. Thanks to you, listeners, for listening wherever you are. And after a break, we look forward to getting back to it in 2023. We'll speak to you again soon. Bye for now.
The J-Talk Podcast. Yes, 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 yes.